Today, we will have Joe Bonzel of the Oak Ridge Boys. Now, Joey will send you an email, and it'll have a tagline that says, from the iPhone of a banjo player. Well, I knew this from before, and when the Oak Ridge Boys had a new album coming out, it's due out, I think it was out April 1st, maybe, or April 15th, A Night Out with the Boys live. It's the Oak Ridge Boys live. It's the first live album they've ever done, believe it or not. 50 million records into the game, they've never done a live album, so they're happy to do that. I thought, I'm going to talk to Joe. I'm going to get to Joe through those banjo connections, and you'll hear a nice discussion with Joe Bonzel of the Oak Ridge Boys today. I'm very happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass today, Joe Bonzel of the Oak Ridge Boys. Joe, how are you?
Well, I'm good, Steve. Great to talk to you, man. Are you well?
I'm doing good. I'm just sitting here. My dog is asleep on the floor, and so we should have an uninterrupted chat. We got several things to talk about, and I'm just very excited to catch up with you on the right at the time that a brand new album from the Oak Ridge Boys, Boys Night Out. Joe, you should be very happy with that recording. I've heard it. It's a wonderful recording of what we've discussed as the part of the fabric of America, DNA of American music. You got to be happy with that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, I'm really happy with everything these days, man. The Oak Ridge Boys are still out here singing. We've got a new album coming out that it sounds to me like everybody's really excited about, the Boys Night Out Live. And, you know, we're singing, we're playing, family's doing good, everybody's healthy. I'm picking my banjo, man, all I can. Trying to learn, trying to grow. It's a constant learning experience there. So I've got my writing going, I've got my banjo playing, I've got the Oak Ridge Boys singing, and it's at almost 66 years old. I don't know how I could be any more settled or any more happy than I am, brother.
Joe, you're doing a nice job of covering a lot of ground that we covered through some sketchy Wi-Fi connections. I appreciate that.
Yeah, we did. I think we've got it going now, though.
This is perfect. If we had done this from the beginning, it would have been absolutely perfect. How much time do you have here, Joe? I don't want to...
I got a little bit, Steve. I'll just follow you, brother.
All right.
Glad to be talking to you.
Yeah, listen, I'm enjoying it. Just the new album, The Boys Night Out. The new album is the first live album that the Oaks have done, which is surprising.
Well, you know, a lot of people are surprised at that, Steve. And, you know, it seems like over the years, we've talked about a live album many, many times, but it's always been pushed to the back burner in lieu of some other project or something. And this time around, it was about a year ago right now, we started recording a bunch of live shows. Dwayne Allen, our lead singer, had a vision that we should be doing that right now. We're singing good. We're feeling good. Lord knows we're the older guys on the block. Let's get some of this down. And the live show has always been the essence and the backbone of what the Oak Ridge Boys are all about. So let's just start cutting some shows and forget that recording equipment's there and just go do it. And that's exactly what we did. And I think we pulled it off. We actually have about 62 songs in the can. All hits are classic Oak songs. I think we could put out a box album as big as this room I'm standing in. But and that may happen someday. But the fact is, once we got in the studio and started to tweak and work on some of this, Cleopatra Records came into the picture. And our manager, Jim Halsey, built up a good relationship with them. And they're the largest independent record label in the world. And their words were, we would love to release a live hits album on the Oak Ridge Boys. Release it worldwide, man, in vinyl, on CD, iTunes, everything, and put all our guns behind it worldwide. Well, we hadn't had a record label say that to us in a while, so the result is Cleopatra Records' first live album by the Oak Ridge Boys, 14 songs, some of the biggest hits, done live, done up big, done right, and I think it's going to really be big.
Oh, it sounds great. It's a great recording, by the way. I've listened to the whole thing. I just got an advance copy and listened to it for about a week or so. And it's a really good, you know, you love to have live music because it's fun, but you like to have a good live recording. If the recording of great music is bad, then you ruin the whole experience. But this is a great live recording, too.
And what I like about it, Steve, it's, you know, all the old songs are there. You know, people can hear Y'all Come Back Saloon on the record. It was a big hit. Elvira, right. Bobby Sue, so forth. But, man, this is the way we're doing it right now.
Right.
This is us today. If you came to hear the Oak Ridge Boys tonight, this is what Elvira sounds like tonight. And, you know, songs change. They metamorphosize over the years. They grow. They develop. And the stage versions of songs especially change a bit over the years. And we've got a power band behind us up there. And the songs are going to sound a little bit different than the original records. We still cop a lot of the licks, but mostly It's an up-to-date power version of some of the hits that, that made us a household name.
And you're right. Everybody knows these songs. And we talked a little bit before we started this recording that everybody, every time you hear these songs, you think, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not that they forgot that they were Oaks tunes, but now they're thinking, now I remember hearing those. And we talked about Elvira. That has to be the most recognizable magic tune that's ever been recorded because it never loses its potency.
Well, it doesn't. You can hear on the album, and if you're at our show, when I yell out, let's sing Elvira, man, the place goes bananas. I mean, it's like we gave them a condo in Montserrat. Everybody's up, everybody's singing. And I think it takes them all back to that 1981 when, you know, a magical year when the whole nation was singing Oom Papa Mau Mau with Richard. And to this day, the song still has steam. It still has legs. And let's face it, man, of all those songs we've had, nothing's bigger than Elvira.
And everybody, Joe, everybody who thinks they can't sing or is afraid to stand up in a crowd when they're at a concert, when that song starts, everybody gets up and everybody can do it or thinks they can, and they can't wait to get involved in the participation of doing that song. You know that. You're on stage looking out.
Oh, man, I love it. And it's all ages, too. You know, you've got young couples out there. You got the young country crowd. You got little kids. You got grandma and grandpa out there our age or older, you know, getting up out of their seats and singing Elvira. I mean, it's really kind of a it's a fun thing. It feels like quintessential American music is what it feels like.
What's so strange, too, is that the Oom Papa thing. I mean, where did that come from? I know it's in the original song, but when you do that, why did that take off to be so such a powerful comeback in that refrain?
You know, if I could explain that, I would have added an Oom Papa Mau Mau to every song we've ever recorded.
It's so much fun, but it's so good. It's so good. This is so you're hinting that there may be some other works in the can of some live recordings at some point be released.
I think it's possible, Steve. We like I said, we've got about 62 songs in the can, and we've just released 14, albeit 14 of the biggest. There's still a lot of big hits left to go, and I don't know, man. I don't know what's going to happen. I know right now the focus is on Boys Night Out Live, and if it's real successful, I guess there could be a 2, a 3, and a 4, or maybe a box set. I really have no idea how this could end up.
It actually hits the stores, what, in April?
April 15th, right on tax day. I know that's depressing, but if anybody has any money at all left after April 15th, maybe our live album will be a pickup for
them. It'll cheer them up. Heck yeah, man. Save a little aside and get this live album from the Oaks. And it's a blast. It's so much fun to listen to. And I assume that you're going to be touring a little bit behind it, right?
Oh, we're touring a lot of bit behind it, actually. The Oak Ridge Boys are always on tour, man. 150, 160 dates a year. It never stops.
Wow. And they just keep selling out, and people keep filling up arenas for you, and you're lucky for that, and they're lucky to get to go.
We've had a great year this year so far. Every date we've played this year has been a sellout but one. And boy, that one was a bomb.
Oh, really?
I don't know if it was the promoter or the town or what, and I won't name the town, because the people that came out were a great audience, but it was like we got out there and said, oh, my God, I was afraid this is the night they're going to stop coming.
Can we blame it on weather?
I don't think so. It was a beautiful day.
All right, never mind.
But thank God the very next night was sold out again, so we breathed a big sigh of relief.
See, even the huge, successfully star-powered Oak Ridge Boys, you still have those insecurities when you walk out on stage.
Well, you know, I always joke about the fact that one of these nights we're going to go out there and nobody's going to be there, and I thought that was going to be the case there a few nights ago. But
Joe, you have a website.
I'm exaggerating, Steve. It was still a size crowd there, but it was far from a sellout.
I understand. Joe, you have a website. Of course, the Oak Ridge Boys do, and they can follow your touring schedule there, and they can also find out a way to get a hold of this new recording when it comes out. You have a website, which to me is fascinating because it talks about, of course, it talks about the Oak Ridge Boys, but it talks about the writings that you're into and the fact that you seem to be addicted to writing. I may be paraphrasing, but you're really into writing down your thoughts and kind of little memos about things, and you put them in the books.
I love to write, Steve. I love the creative process, whether it's a new song or a record or a new book, a new short story, a new kitchen countertop, something that is here today that wasn't here yesterday because you had a vision and you listened and you did something about it and you worked at it. I think the creative process is one of the greatest things ever. I've got a chapter in my book from my perspective called My Theory of Creativity. And it talks about how Everyone has creative juices, but you've got to be listening. I love to take the time and come up with an idea of some kind, or maybe just start writing and let it find its own way. But next thing you know, you have something. I'm working on a little piece right now. I have no idea where it's going at all, but I just started writing one day because I had a little bit of an idea. And I don't know if it's going to be a book, a story, maybe even a good song idea. It could be any one of the above. But man, it's just a matter of doing it and listening to those creative voices. And I believe it's God. I think all creativity comes from the great creator. And I think that with our relationship with God, like a lot of things in this fast-paced day and age we live in, you've got to take the time to be quiet and listen. And if you listen, good things can happen.
That's exactly right. And everybody that listens to this program, we talk a lot about supporting live music. And even if you're just like me, you play with friends, you pick with friends, take the time to listen to that call, whatever is urging you to be creative, whether it's could be playing music, could be writing, could be singing. They're all separate things. But you are so right, Joe. Take the time to listen to that and let it sit for a while, and you will enjoy the results of it.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times we have a great dream even, and I think God speaks to us in dreams sometimes. And you know, most of the time you'll wake up and that dream will be gone by 9 o'clock when you're eating eggs and can't even remember it. Man, get up and write something down. If you're in the shower and an idea hits you for something that's creative, make a note. I have stood soaking wet in my bathroom, much to my wife's dismay, and wrote things down that I thought about in the shower. So, I mean, it's just a matter of doing it. A lot of people just don't pay attention. And I think those that pay attention are rewarded.
And it may not be, let's not confuse the fact with the great success that you've had with the Oak Ridge Boys. And rewarding isn't that part of the reward. It's personal. It's a personal reward.
It is. That's why I made mention of a new kitchen countertop. I mean, things that are here today that weren't here yesterday because you had an idea. Mm-hmm. And you followed through. That's all it is. It's little personal rewards and victories to me. I mean, every day there is always something that can happen that can be a personal reward for you and can lift your life a little bit and change your life a little bit. Like I say, everybody just needs to listen.
That's great. That's great. Now, let me just tell you this. Do not ever play your banjo in the shower. Or you can, but you know, you're going to have to change the strings a lot. Of course, now they have the plastic head. It's not like the old days, but can we take a second? And you and I had a great talk about banjos, but we want to make sure people can hear it clearly. Can we talk a little bit about why you were crazy enough at the peak of this great career to decide to start playing a banjo, which turns a lot of people off, by the way?
Well, you know, it's not exactly a chick magnet, Steve, but...
Don't say that. Don't say that. I'll lose all my listeners.
You can run a few girls off with a banjo. I've seen it happen, actually. But my wife, for instance, I mean, my wife will walk down the steps and I'll be on the couch down there and I'll be getting the banjo out of the case. And she'll say something like, are you going to play that right now, like right here? I said, no, honey, I'm just going to look at it. I'll take it aside and play it if I feel like it. But
how do you know she's not excited in anticipation, hoping that you are? You seem to be assuming that she's going to go back upstairs.
Because I know her too well. She came downstairs one time and I was picking and she said, oh, you're playing that. She says, no wonder the cats are all in the closet. You know, I have also found that cats do not like the banjo. They really don't. My cats at home, I swear to God, when they hear the clicks on the case undo, they're gone. They're toast. They're out of there. They're out of the room.
You're right. I agree with you. I've got some cats, and I can confirm that 100%. So you're still learning. Learning the banjo is a lifetime thing, as you know. Nobody perfects it except those very special. And even if you talk to the ones who are the best that we recognize, they will tell you every day they hear something new and relearn something.
Yes. And again, there's the joy of the creative process. I consider myself a banjo student much more than I do a banjo player. I love the instrument. I love the sound of it. I love what it can do when played well. And I'm always trying to improve myself. And you're right. You talk to the greatest musicians in the world, not just banjo players. And they will tell you they are students as well. Bela Fleck considers himself a student. And he just wrote like a symphony behind a banjo and other acoustic instruments. So, I mean, I'm a long, long way from writing a symphony. But I've written a couple of good bluegrass songs. One you may hear someday called Flying Sucks.
Does it have anything to do with how you get your instrument translated?
It does a little bit, but but you know, man, the fact of the matter is, again, I go back to that creative process thing. I developed a love for the banjo. Had I realized it was going to be as hard to play as it was, I might have aborted it early. But once I got started, I decided I'm going to stay the course. And today, after 11 years, yes, I should be better, but I can take my banjo out of that case and make it sound like a banjo. And I remember in earlier days saying, if I could just someday do that, I would be happy.
Yeah, if I could just get an alternating thumb pattern that I hear the notes distinctly, that's how you get hooked, by the way. That's how you
Yes. When you play a roll and every note is clean and clear, and it's got the good, crisp banjo sound to every note. It ain't like every third note goes away. Every note in the roll sounds good. When you can do a lick and you can slide and pull off at least good enough to make it sound decent, you're maybe not going to ever be a professional banjo player. And I don't think I'm in danger of that, to be honest. I think a top tier bluegrass group would open fire on me within 4 minutes. But although I did play at the Kentucky State Fair one night with the Graskals, I went out there with Kristen Scott Benson and played some Foggy Mountain Breakdown. And oh, how gracious they were.
Well, you know, you're playing next to Kristen, just follow her lead or get out of the way. But she's she is one of the all time best.
Oh my gosh. And we were sitting in the trailer practicing. And she did this up the neck lick, which is just a two finger C chord with a Foggy Mountain roll on a couple of different spots. But I had never done it before. And I said, "Whoa, what did you just do?" And she took the time to show it to me. No, it wasn't difficult. It took me a little while to learn it. But now when I play Foggy Mountain Breakdown, I go up and hit that up the neck. And I'll think of Kristen and say, "Thank you, Kristen."
And what a great, you're having fun. I mean, that's the thing about it. When you get done performing, do you find that the banjo is something you can do to kind of, assuming there's nobody else around and no cats and not your wife, do you feel like it's something you can relax with?
Well, you know, I actually play every day on the bus. I'll go out on a show day, and I'll either go out to the bus before everybody gets there and play for a couple of hours, or we'll get to the building early, and I'll find what I call a banjo hole and a dressing room somewhere in the backstage somewhere, and I'll just sit in there and play and pick and just enjoy it and kind of clear my mind and work on licks, work on rolls, work on songs. I mean, you know, you got to practice, man. You got to do it. If you're not going to practice, you're never going to get anywhere. So I do try to get my practice time in. And I do love the instrument. I love to sit back and play it. It's a great thing for me on every level.
Joe, do you suffer from what so many of us do? And I quit counting mine that way. I have plausible deniability. Do you have that instrument acquisition syndrome where we just type different banjos for different reasons, tell ourselves that we need them?
I have that with guns. I've been quoted as saying you can't have too many guns or too many banjos. So I guess that works with banjos too. I actually was that way for a couple of years, and I had all kind of goofy banjos all around. Some of them were really horrible too. And I either gave them to charity or gave them to kids. And I've been really stuck on my Sonny Osborne Chief here for a while. I think I told you the other day in an email or something when you saw Sonny that I still need a maple. I noticed you said you played a maple.
Mm-hmm.
And mine is, God, I can't think right now. It's not the maple.
Is it mahogany?
Yes, it's the mahogany version. Okay. And it sounds great, but I am jonesing a little bit for that maple Chief. And I almost bought one a couple years ago. Sonny told me, said, "I got one right here."
He's got them.
And he's got them, so I may end up having to do that. Have you ever heard of a Cox banjo?
Yes. Yes.
Do they sound as good as they do online? Because I've heard them online. They sounded great.
You know, I've heard them live, Joe, but it's been so long. It was probably at IBMA years ago, and it sounded good then, but I would say they probably are, but I haven't heard them in a while. But there's so many great manufacturers. I happen to have a Chief, as you do.
Uh-huh.
So I also have an Ohm. Upper quality banjos for me. I have an Ohm. I have a Sullivan that I got from First Quality. I like the Chief because it seems to get that sound that I, as close as I can get without spending six figures on a banjo, which I'm never going to do. I think the Chief delivers that.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I love the sound of the chief. I think it's just a great sound. I actually heard the other day from someone whose last name was Cox, who's related to the banjo people. Mm-hmm. And that's why I guess I'm asking, because I looked them up online and I did some listening to them and I thought, no, they are pretty good sounding banjos.
I think they're fine. I think they're fine. You know, you get a good instrument and get it set up well, and then you'll know.
Well, that's the key. I know every once in a while I'll call Charlie Cushman.
Exactly.
And I'll say, Charlie, it's like going to Jiffy Lube, you know?
Yes.
You know, I need you under the hood here. My banjos aren't sounding so hot. He'll say, well, bring them by the house.
That's where I go. That's where I go. And have you been up to where he works on those things?
Yeah, man, the guy's awesome. I've got an old Granada. It ain't real old, but I mean, it's not a great sounding banjo for what it costs and what it is. A Gibson. And I'll take that thing to Charlie, and I swear for about a year after it comes back from Charlie, it sounds magnificent. It always seems to revert back to that goofy sound that I don't like in it. It's kind of a dead sounding thing. I don't know.
The cool thing about Charlie, too, and Charlie's been on the show, and he's a friend of mine, and I've had him set up banjos for me and sat in the room where he has all these magic elixirs and all this different stuff. And the reality of it is his way of doing things can't be written in a book. It's all in his head and his hearing, and each banjo is different. And you go away and you come back and you have this instrument that sounds 100 times better than when you dropped it off. It's all in his hands and his head.
And he even knows if a banjo is a piece of crap and there ain't no hope for it, too.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, and he won't touch it.
That's right.
I know some banjos that he just hates in my conversations with him. I won't mention no names, but oh my gosh, he'll get real like vehement about it, you know.
I've heard that conversation too. Well, it sounds like you're having a blast. I mean, that's all you can do. If you're not having fun practicing something like a banjo, then don't do it, because it is difficult. And when you see the masters like Baylor or Sonny when he was playing, or Charlie, my goodness, when you see Charlie do that Reno stuff and all that, I mean, you think, wow, I'm never going to be that good, but I can have fun doing this, which is what the point is.
Well, that's just it. It's having fun, and I enjoy the banjo for what it is. I enjoy the fact that I have never, like I said earlier, played an instrument at all. I've always been a singer. And so for me to take a banjo out of the case and pick it and sit it on my knee and make it sound good and be able to play a few songs, and I don't know, man. It's just like it's just really cool. I enjoy it. And I'll tell you what else. You know, I've run into some top-tier banjo players that have come to me and said, and this thrills me to death, has come to me and said, you know, that banjo-y persona of yours has really done a lot for the five-string banjo. And people in the banjo community are well aware of it. And, man, that just, like, gave me chills. I mean, holy cow, isn't that neat? But yeah. I guess I have brought some attention to it. And
absolutely.
And so that's, you know, that's a good thing.
Well, when the new album come out, the live one, Boys Not Out Live, I thought, I could talk to Joe, because we can talk about the album, which is great, and everybody's going to go follow you and find it when it comes out in April. But then I thought, well, in between all that, we can talk about banjo. So I thought, I zeroed in on you right away, because I knew about that banjo-y persona you're talking about. So yeah, it works.
Well, you know, I am banjo-y, and I enjoy playing. I've gotten to play on several Oaks recordings, and there's a gospel album out called Back Home Again. Okay. And I play on a song. I actually got a little ride, a little turnaround on one of those songs. I worked with Ben Isaacs on it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll admit to you that it took me a while to get it, but I got it. And, you know, now I'll listen to that song. What trying to think. Standing in the Need of Prayer. It's on Back Home Again.
Okay.
And there's a little bitty turnaround in there. And but I didn't eat that. And it's me. And I kind of copped that Jim Mills Standing in the Need of Prayer turnaround.
Okay.
It don't sound near like Brother Jimmy, but I did get the idea with the big rake. He's got that rake down, man, the big rake.
I throw that rake in
on everything I do, man. I just love the rake.
Anytime you can fit one in, and the way Jimmy does it, it's going to wake everybody up, too, because he's just got such a powerful right hand.
Well, you know, he told me one time when he was back with Kentucky Thunder, he said, listen, he said, I pick hard. I'm going to admit to you, I pick hard. If you don't pick hard in this band, you're going to get lost.
Right.
And me, I don't pick that hard. I think it was Charlie Cushman who told me one time that, you know, you don't have to pick hard. He said, I used to pick real hard. I used to blister myself. He said, but you don't have to do that. You just play it. And he did a little thing, went all the way down the neck playing real. And I thought, you know, that's a good idea. And I think because of that Charlie Cushman thing, I quit trying to play hard like Jimmy Mills. And I think it's actually helped my playing, to be honest with you.
And I bet the rest of the members in the Oak Ridge Boys, when you're traveling on the bus, I bet you're happy that Charlie told, they're happy that Charlie told you to.
Well, I'll tell you, I also have this great banjo mute. It's like a little thing that screws down over top of the bridge.
Yes.
And it'll save your marriage, man. You can actually sit and play in the same room with her, and she won't leave you.
Oh man, Joe, listen, this has been such a great, and I'm so glad that you were willing to stick. We had some technical problems, folks, and we worked through it and and Joe came up with a solution. So you're here in the nice, clean version of Joe Bonzo, the Oak Ridge Boys, and I have thoroughly enjoyed this, man. I love the new album.
Thank you.
I love the fact that you're playing banjo and having a blast and all the writing that you're doing. This is just a wonderful time.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate what you're doing there at Unreal Bluegrass, and I'm real honored that you would take the time to talk to me as well, to be honest, and I hope we do it again.
Anytime. We'll find it and enjoy the tour and just knock them dead every time you go out on stage. I know the Oak Ridge Boys will.
Thank you very much, Steve. God bless, my brother.
Thank you. God bless you.